Dr. Harvey, you and I were having a conversation about men's health. And I wonder how men's health is different from women's health because, you know, women spend two-thirds of all the healthcare dollars and have two-thirds of all the appointments to healthcare practitioners and take two-thirds of all the drugs. So what is it with guys that they're not so active in their healthcare? Is it just they're healthier?
Well, I think it's a couple of different things. Women and the women's reproductive system does cause a lot of shift, dynamic shift in a woman's physiology. Every month there's the cycle. And so this sets, I think, the woman's physiology and the women up for more symptoms and other challenges than men have. Men kind of just run on autopilot, it seems. However, I think there's also the kind of male headstrong attitude of do, and kind of ignore themselves. They get caught up in the process. A lot of people do, but I think men tend to do that more because women are nurturers by nature, and so they're paying attention to these kind of issues more.
Well, and in raising children, you know, you become cognizant of those little symptoms that show up.
Right.
And give them some sort of merit that they really don't belong there.
So, I've seen, actually, it's interesting. I've seen a couple of men in the practice in the past couple of weeks that really, we practice functional medicine, people that are proactively looking for ways for optimal wellness. And a couple of these guys came in, and I'm not really sure why they were there, because it was evident that they weren't interested in lifestyle changes. They weren't interested in nutrition or, changing the way they perceive their own paradigm. They wanted a pill to fix their ill.
Well, and I can remember when the very first wine paradox, the French paradox study came out, which was the study that said that the French eat a whole lot more fatty foods, but they have half the rate of heart disease, and everybody attributed it to the drinking of wine.
Right.
And so I had a client that came in, and, you know, he had a cholesterol of 300. He had high blood pressure. He was overweight. He was definitely looking like he was going to walk down the diabetes road. He was out of shape. And when I asked him, you know, why he had come to me, he said, well, I want you to give me an herb that'll take care of these problems. I just don't want to take a drug. And I said, well, doesn't matter whether it's a drug or an herb. What's true is you've got to make some choice changes. And he said, well, I'm not really interested in making any choice changes. I want to do exactly what I'm doing right now. But I want you to give me a pill.
Yeah, and this is the Western medicine approach has trained us to think in this, I think, kind of bizarre manner that we can do whatever we want to our bodies and then just take a magic pill to fix all of our ills. And I got to tell you, it ain't out there.
Well, one of the things that I've seen that's happened in my practice in the recent past has been the number of guys that come into my clinic and say, I think I have a testosterone deficiency.
Yes, they've done a really good job of marketing low T.
Low T, yes. The idea that testosterone is somehow a magic bullet for everything that happens to men is something that I'd like to explore on this show. But the first thing that we want to do is to introduce our listeners to testosterone, because this is an androgen hormone, or what is considered to be a male hormone, even though it is a hormone that is also produced in women to a very small extent in our adrenal glands, both of men and women, and for women in their ovaries and for men in their testes. And this hormone, testosterone, is critical for the sexual maturation of the male, the amount of muscle mass we carry, the weight and development of our bones, some of the changes that happen in the brain. So testosterone has lots of effects, both on men and women. It is not strictly a sexual hormone.
Right, and it's directly related to estrogen, which also is a very potent sex hormone and a metabolite of testosterone. You actually create estrogen out of testosterone, kind of the way the Bible says that Eve was created from Adam's rib. It's very interesting that the male hormone actually metabolizes into the female hormone. And it will do so in men, and it's very necessary because they've linked low estrogen levels. And actually, there's a very, very small amount of men that have no estrogen receptors. They don't have
really?
Any way to actually hear the estrogen signal. And so these men have more likely osteoporosis. On the other hand, certain individuals, alcoholics especially, get a very high level of estrogen because of the way the liver is metabolizing the testosterone, and they end up with excess estrogen, which can be related to gynecomastia, or male breast formation, and prostate cancer.
Known on the street as moobs.
Moobs, yes.
Terrible, terrible word. But I also see breast development that happens in men that are diabetic, because the diabetes causes the testosterone to convert into estrogen as well, and that'll also stimulate breast development.
And another thing that happens there is that in that whole metabolic syndrome, testosterone often goes lower because of the stresses on the body, and there'll be less signaling to produce testosterone. And the converse is true also, that a low testosterone can actually result in metabolic syndrome, obesity, and low muscle mass, and the whole road down to diabetes.
Well, when we talk about metabolic syndrome, what we're talking about is a series of symptoms that are correlated into a syndrome. And, you know, when we use the word syndrome, we're talking about a cluster of symptoms that often appear together. So if I have a sore throat and my nose is running and I'm sneezing, then that syndrome is called a cold.
Right.
So the nature of metabolic syndrome means that something's gone goofy with the metabolism. And so these are individuals that are starting to gain weight, especially around the middle. Their blood pressure is elevating. Their fasting glucose is going up. Their fasting insulin is going up. They're becoming more insulin resistant. They're not diabetic yet, but they've got a ticket for the ride.
That's right. They're on the spectrum of diabetes and spectrum of metabolic dysfunction, which brings me full circle to the tie-in, I think, that's really critical between cardiovascular disease in men and sexual function in men. There's a really strong correlation between erectile dysfunction and cardiovascular illness.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's really important to tie that in because when you look at the risk factors for bad prostate health and bad heart disease, they're very much the same kinds of things. Anything that'll promote inflammation are going to be promoting the bad disease in both. So a high animal fat diet actually promotes bad cardiovascular disease and also promotes prostate problems, as does a high sugar diet.
Well, you know, you talk about cardiovascular disease in men because it is the single biggest killer that we have in America today. If you take accidents out of the equation, more than 50% of all the deaths in America of men are from heart disease.
Right.
And so the nature of heart disease, you know, there's all sorts of different mechanisms that are going on. You can have plaque accumulate in the arteries and lower the amount of blood flow and raise the amount of blood pressure. You can have a situation where the heart gets, I use the word flobby in my practice, not a real word, but I tell people that the elasticity of the muscle in their heart gets like the elastic in old underwear. It doesn't have any snap to it
right.
anymore. So there are different kinds of heart disease that can show up. But, you know, one of the most popular, the most popular drug that is sold, and I say popular just in terms of numbers, here in the United States and around the world are cholesterol-lowering drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so these statin drugs that lower the cholesterol number are claimed to reduce heart disease across the board. And yet, one of the first symptoms that I see in men who go on cholesterol-lowering drugs is a fairly rapid decline in their testosterone and in their libido and their erectile function. And so, you know, I'm curious about how much statin drugs are creating erectile dysfunction problems that people are attributing to testosterone, but in fact should be attributed to the nature of taking statin drugs.
And that leads us to the next question, is really how much benefit do the statin drugs actually confer? There's a great study that was published. I have the e-published version of it. It's not due out for another week in print. This is brand new information. They did a review of six different studies, four lifestyle modification studies and two statin drug studies. And what they showed, this is the effect of lifestyle modification and cardiovascular risk factor reduction on erectile dysfunction. And the study showed, very interestingly, that in the two statin studies, that there was definitely an improvement in sexual function, and the difference between that and the control group was 2.66. This is a weighted mean difference. It's a score. It's a an improvement on a sexual dysfunction score. And then for four lifestyle studies, the improvement was 2.4. So the difference between lifestyle modification and statin drugs was 0.26.
So what does that translate to if I've got 1,000 guys?
Virtually no difference between lifestyle modification and statin usage. So what it's saying is there's no point in taking a poison that may rot your brain and cause fatigue and all kinds of other dysfunctions in your system when you could actually simply change lifestyle and get the same result in reducing erectile dysfunction.
But I don't want to quit eating steak every Friday night. I don't want to quit drinking my beer. I don't want to quit having cheeseburgers. I don't want to start eating breakfast.
Well, you're saying then the converse. I want to have cancer. I want to have erectile dysfunction. I want to have a heart attack, and I want to have a stroke. And please give me diabetes too. This is what you're asking for if you don't make the lifestyle changes.
Well, you know, the situation in terms of statin drugs and libido, I think that at the point that America learns that the use of statin drugs can affect libido, can affect muscle mass, can affect the tendency toward becoming a diabetic, I think we'll see a downturn in the amount of statin drugs that are sold.
I agree.
But, you know, next month, Lipitor, which is the most popular and profitable drug that exists in the United States,
$30 billion worth,
is going to go off patent.
Yeah, generic.
And so the nature of, you know, getting that drug cheaper actually may be a disadvantage.
Yes, because I see the next step, the same way they went with proton pump inhibitors, is that you'll be able to find a 10-milligram Lipitor over the counter for patients or for people just to walk up and buy and start putting themselves
on
the
toxin. Yeah, I mean, I get people that come into my practice that are buying Pepcid over the counter, the proton pump inhibitors that 3 years ago were on prescription, and they're dosing themselves with that so that they can go out and eat pizza.
Yes.
Trouble.
Well, that's the fellow that I was talking about that made me think that they're just not interested. He's taking 5 milligrams of simvastatin with a normal cholesterol because he just wants to protect against the possibility of his eating the steak and the French fries and everything else.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the story of the guy that was practicing here in Sarasota years ago. And I had a client and she had very dense breasts. And when she got her mammogram, they couldn't really read the mammogram because her breast tissue was so dense.
Yes.
And the doctor suggested that she have a mastectomy done because her breasts were so dense that if she got a cancer, they wouldn't be able to see it. So they were going to remove her breasts as a preventative technique. And I suggested that she go back to this physician and tell this physician that she would have her breasts removed on the day that he had his testicles removed in order to prevent prostate cancer. So if he was willing to do that as a preventative measure, then she could go ahead and remove her breasts as a preventative measure.
Seriously, I could understand that if she had three first-degree relatives and BRCA positive, but otherwise, that's pretty crazy.
All right, so let's look at what happens when we've got baby boys. Like I talked about this last week, that we were at the beach and there was a mom there and she had about an 18-month-old and she was slathering on sunscreen. And very many sunscreens contained oxybenzone, which acts like an estrogen and acts like an endocrine disruptor in the body. And all I'm thinking of is this baby boy is being exposed to estrogen at the time that his development is just beginning. And then later on, I saw a whole group of chimps. I'm sorry, a whole group of young teenagers. They were all about, 13, 14, that kind of awkward age where they're not driving yet, but they're too big for their bicycles.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And they were out there at the beach. And I was actually surprised that the mom that was the caregiver of that group, the herder of that group, was making them all slather on skin cream. Sunblock. And all I'm thinking is, this is the point of gonadal development. This is the point of the masculinization taking place. And here we're exposing these young men to estrogen. Is that really a good idea?
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, especially when they're already making so many hormones and eating usually poorly enough that they're not metabolizing them and working on their own little bit of gynecomastia. Adolescent boys with a little bit of breast tissue is not unusual. But it really relates to the amount of estrogen being produced from the testosterone that their raging pubescent testes are producing and not detoxing, not dealing with well.
So what happens when a guy comes to you and he says, doctor, my libido is fallen and I want you to give me some testosterone because I want to have my libido back? Is that a testosterone-driven issue?
Well, there may be a bit of assistance there from dihydrotestosterone. And I think this is where we can look at the anabolic versus androgenic effects of the steroids. There's a difference in that testosterone has androgenic effects, and that means man-building, essentially, masculinizing effects. And then there's anabolic effects, and those are the ones dealing with the normal structures of everyone's body. Testosterone helps men and women build muscle. But the androgenic effects, such as increasing libido and improving erection, those are really more in the realm of dihydrotestosterone, which is the metabolite of testosterone that is most active in these sex organs, which are going to develop from it. And dihydrotestosterone is made from testosterone by an enzyme called 5-alpha reductase. There are popular drugs on the market now that actually are used to help with hair growth and with to actually improve it, because dihydrotestosterone helps create male pattern baldness. So this Propecia, a finasteride, a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, can actually alter that dihydrotestosterone level. So I've seen men who come in with prostate problems and their urologist has put them on a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, their dihydrotestosterone goes away and they immediately become no libido, fatigued, tired, and not focused on what's going on in their life.
But their hair doesn't fall out.
But their hair no longer falls out and they can pee better.
So pick, right?
Exactly. So it's really about this complex balance between these different hormones, the estrogen, the testosterone, the dihydrotestosterone. If you drink too much, way too much, you'll shift your testosterone over to estrogen and you won't have enough available to make dihydrotestosterone. That's why old alcoholic men get the moobs and they have no libido and they have no erectile function because they're not making dihydrotestosterone anymore.
Yeah, but they're too drunk to care. Unfortunately.
Essentially.
Well, the thing that, that I see in my practice is that men believe that if they just get a little bit of testosterone, it's going to solve all these problems. And what's true is, because there is a dance, an interrelationship that goes on between testosterone and estrogen, and because testosterone can turn to estrogen, actually giving men testosterone can oftentimes make the whole situation worse.
Exactly.
Because they're already biotransforming testosterone into estrogen, and now you give them more testosterone, which they turn around and convert into even more estrogen.
Right.
So the nature of understanding hormones is always understanding the web. And, my training was that you start with the adrenal glands. Before you deal with the reproductive hormones, whether it's estrogen or testosterone, you start by looking at the adrenal glands and make sure that the cortisol and DHEA, the two major components that are being produced by the adrenal glands, are balanced and nurtured first, because sometimes when you support the adrenal glands, you automatically change the sex steroid hormones.
Yeah, it's very true. The production of testosterone comes from, as we've talked before on the show, cholesterol turns to pregnenolone, and then that gets converted to either dihydroepiandrosterone, DHEA, or progesterone. And the DHEA can turn into androstenedione and testosterone.
Oh, we're going to confuse them with all these big words,
Very
Dr.
much.
Harvey.
So what I wanted to say is that it has a direct way to get into testosterone, but DHEA is also the stress hormone reservoir. It's we're talking about the adrenals. DHEA converts into cortisol. So when someone is under a lot of psychological or physiologic stress, it's likely that they're going to deplete DHEA by making more cortisol in that stress situation. That will detract from some production of testosterone. So that will alter that a bit. It will also alter the production of the estrogen. And so we have to deal with the adrenals first because stress will alter all of the other hormones. In fact, one study showed, or several have actually showed, that the stress will actually reduce prolactin as well, and prolactin helps to tell the testicles to make more testosterone. It'll help tell the system to actually boost testosterone production.
Yeah, but, you know, telling people not to have stress in their life, you know, is like, that's a fantasy.
It is.
And because we live in a world that keeps giving us more things to be afraid of. I mean, the second that you're done being afraid of one thing, you get to be afraid of something else.
So how can we learn to alter our stress response?
That's a whole other show, Dr. Harvey.
Exactly.
But when we look at the nature of testosterone, you know, when I see guys that have used the synthetic steroids, and they've used them to bulk up. They want to turn into Arnold.
That is anabolic, not androgenic effect.
Exactly. And those guys, let's talk about the difference between anabolic and androgenic effects, because some individuals believe that the only thing that's going on with these muscle heads is that they're just getting a little bit of extra testosterone. And especially when we see women who are, you know, world-class bodybuilders, and they have bodies that don't look like women anymore.
Right.
And oftentimes, these anabolic hormones are what have allowed them to alter their body type.
Yes, that's exactly it. There was actually in the paper last week, a competitive female bodybuilder who had an Arnold Schwarzenegger body and kind of feminine face and long hair, and she did really stress out her body immensely with lots of testosterone to get there. The changes that occur in the body when you do that are about muscle building. That's anabolic. She also had some masculine, female bodybuilders will get some masculinization in growing facial hair and things like that as well. So they have to be very careful about doing extra steroids. The nature of the anabolic steroids and bodybuilders that use them actually are not getting a lot of androgenic effect in general, because they're a different kind of steroid. They're not testosterone. They don't metabolize as testosterone, and they really just make the body build muscle, and they really don't improve sex performance. It makes people agitated, but not necessarily increase libido.
Well, and my understanding, and from individuals who've used these anabolic steroids, is that over time they can actually shrink the testicles and even shrink the penis.
Yes, actually, there will be atrophy because the whole system gets turned off. Testosterone actually has a negative feedback mechanism. When the body's making enough, it feeds back into the brain and goes to the pituitary and the hypothalamus, and the brain hormones called growth hormone releasing, gonadotropal hormone releasing hormone, which actually tells the body to either release estrogen or testosterone, goes down in the hypothalamus, and in the pituitary, you stop making LH and FSH. Both hormones are the on switch for testes and ovaries. So men and women both have LH and FSH, and when they go up, the ovaries or the testes start making more hormones. These get shut off completely when you have exogenous anabolic steroids going on board. It doesn't matter whether it's testosterone or anything else.
So the body reads the presence of the anabolic steroid, and the body stops making its own.
Yes, it just shuts off production. And so then, because the testes are getting no signals from the brain to do their job, they just kind of atrophy and go away.
Well, but the other side of that is I've had reported to me, even with men who've been on Androgel or some of these other testosterone supportive products, exactly the same effect, that they have had an increase in their serum testosterone level, but they've had a decrease in the size of their testes.
Yes.
And so just adding more testosterone doesn't always solve the problem.
No, and testosterone, as we know, it responds to stress. So that if you have a person under physiologic and psychologic stress and they develop symptoms of fatigue or decreased libido, then on evaluation, we may see the low testosterone. It may be just below normal. It may be significantly depressed. But usually the people that I see that are having functional physiologic problems and not simply lack of testes. You know, if the you can have the testes completely fail, but I don't think that's generally the case. Toxicity and mumps can kill the testes and have no more sperm or testosterone production. But in most cases, it's a combination of toxicities, physical toxicities, physiologic and psychologic, and the stress will drive down production. So if a normal level is 275 or 300, and the person comes in with a level of 230 or 240, it's slightly below normal. They're definitely going to have symptoms. The symptoms are mixed bag, though. The fatigue could be coming from the stress and from the low testosterone. But then again, the testosterone is likely to be lower because of the stress. Cortisol increases, DHEA decreases, prolactin decreases, and testosterone production decreases. Dealing with all the rest of the picture is critical. That's why looking at the adrenals and other issues is really super important to get testosterone back on track.
But you see, once again, I have women that come into my practice that say my libido is low. And you know what I say to women all the time is that that is not a testosterone-driven issue. Testosterone may make a difference in libido, but it's, you know, over and over again when I've tested the levels of testosterone in women, I found women who claim to have low libido having very normal testosterone levels.
Yes.
And I've had clients that hump like bunnies and they have very low testosterone levels. And so some women think that, oh, if you just add a little dab of testosterone, that's going to solve the problems. And you know what I tell women is that libido is very different in men and women. One of the things that is the most critical for libido in women is a feeling of safety. You know, when we hear the horror that one out of every three women has had an attempted rape, that, you know, that number sounds too high.
Yes.
But when you survey large populations of women, you'll find out that one out of three of them have gone through some sort of forced sex episode. And so because of that, safety becomes the single most important issue in libido. Women want sex for intimacy. And so in order to have that intimacy, they've got to have safety.
Right.
So when women talk to me about libido, the first thing that I have to ask is, do you feel safe? You know, is it a relationship that is really nourishing? Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is, are you making enough time for it? Or is it just one more thing on your duty roster to get done by the end of the day?
Right.
You know, I got to load the dishwasher. I got to do two loads of clothes. I've got to run the sweeper and I've got to have sex. You know, if it ends up being something that's on the duty roster, then there's no way that you're going to have arousal, no matter how much testosterone you use.
That's right. So much more than just the hormone goes into it. Even for men, though, arousal can be lots faster and doesn't require the same safety. I still think that intimacy is critical. And if the individual is not feeling comfortable, yet maybe wants to do something, that's a real good reason not to have a good libido or to be able to get or sustain an erection. The mind has so much control over that.
So when we look at erectile dysfunction in men and we realize that this is not primarily a testosterone problem, what kind of problem is it primarily?
Lifestyle.
Well, I say that it's blood flow.
Blood flow.
And so the nature of the same things that cause heart disease causing problems with erectile dysfunction are because we're not getting adequate blood flow and we're not getting nitric oxide.
Mm-hmm.
NO, our old buddy that helps the blood vessels open up and give good blood flow. I use arginine, the amino acid in my practice, and I call arginine Mother Nature's Viagra.
It really is. It's a wonderful amino acid, and it promotes dilation of blood vessels. Nitric oxide is generated by, it's triggered by the arginine, and really can result in great efficacy.
Well, you know, what we want to do is just talk for a minute about nitric oxide, which is actually a gas. And this is not nitrous oxide that you got from the dentist to get goofy. Nitric oxide, on the other hand, is a vasodilator in your blood vessels. And arginine, the amino acid, is the precursor of that. So when you have arginine in your system, and I generally give it to people on an empty stomach first thing in the morning or a half an hour or so before meals, you don't really want to have that amino acid compete with the amino acid that's in your breakfast eggs or your, you know, chicken sandwich at lunch or another protein. You want to have it go in to the body when it can have 100% access and not be competing with other amino acids.
Right.
But when I give arginine on a daily basis, one of the first things that I get is a beautiful lowering of blood pressure. It's one of the key things that I use in chronic hypertension.
Well, you'd think that if the blood pressure is lowering, that you might not have as good blood circulation for an erection. But actually, the converse is true. Hypertension actually prevents that filling. People with hypertension actually have erectile dysfunction, and once you normalize it, it improves much better.
So what happens when we have a guy, and he's on a statin drug, and he's on a high blood pressure medication, and, you know, he's moving along with the heart disease? There's no amount of testosterone that's going to solve that problem. In fact, if anything, the testosterone might make him worse.
It might, because testosterone in that situation, I think that person's moderately toxic. They may metabolize it into estrogen. They may metabolize it poorly, essentially, and not be able to utilize it. And even if they do get good levels, it's not going to be effective because there's other things interfering.
Well, and I have to look at testosterone for other things. You know, we talk about testosterone fundamentally as it affects sexual function and sexual organs, but I think it's important that we also make people aware of the fact that testosterone is important for the health of the muscles and the health of the bones.
Yes.
So women who are osteoporotic are women who often benefit greatly with the addition of estrogen and testosterone together.
Yes.
With progesterone, all three of those hormones, estrogen that we think of as a female hormone, progesterone that we think of as a hormone of pregnancy, and testosterone together make a tremendous difference in the density of bones and also in muscle atrophy. You know, one of the things that we've talked about many times on this show is the fact that the primary reason that women are admitted to a nursing home in the state of Florida is frailty. And that frailty comes from a condition called sarcopenia, or loss of muscle mass. And so that muscle mass loss that can happen over time, testosterone can help to offset that.
And the other thing that helps to offset that is exercise. Exercise actually will help increase borderline testosterone levels, especially resistance training below the waist. Doing squats and lunges has actually been shown to improve testosterone levels. The other benefits of exercise is that it will actually improve the metabolism of the hormones and reduce the use of cortisol, reduce the DHEA, because you're de-stressing the system and you might free up more hormone production elsewhere.
Well, and we also want to talk about the fact that testosterone is related to the mind. You know, there have been some pretty significant studies that have talked about the fact that men who have higher testosterone have a lot of resistance against all forms of senility.
Yes. Addition of testosterone actually really does seem to help clear up the mind, too. It's a double-edged sword. Low testosterone will actually reduce cognitive function, and normal testosterone levels will make the brain function actually much, much more normally.
But I have to talk about test, not guess. You know, this is a perfect example of understanding that you've got to find out what your levels are to know what you should do. You test, you don't guess. I just had a 76-year-old man come into my practice whose doctor put him on 200 milligrams of DHEA and testosterone.
Wow. So he really
wants to And I said, oh, I'd like to see what those levels are. What were the testing levels? And he said, well, he didn't do any testing.
Hmm. Sounds rather risky to me. I like the comprehensive hormone testing. You were mentioning the adrenals. So when I do an evaluation of somebody, yes, I look at cortisol levels. I look at DHEA levels because we need to know what the adrenal gland's doing. I save some of the more esoteric hormones for complex cases that we're not getting results in, but I rarely have to go to look at things like androstenedione.